the book of Joshua, please, chapter number 1, verse number 8. Joshua chapter 1 and verse number, well, I'll read several verses from Joshua 1. I think I'll just read the first 8 verses. Joshua chapter 1. It's going to be a very unusual Bible study tonight. Most unusual. Joshua chapter 1. Verse 1. Now after the death of Moses, the servant of the Lord, it came to pass that the Lord spake unto Joshua the son of Nun, Moses' minister, saying, let me stop and say this. It's an unbelievable thing in the Bible and in church history, Christian history, how many men became great men, not planning to become great men, just by serving great men. At the opportune time, they became, God placed the mantle upon them. Joshua never intended to be the leader of Israel. All he wanted to do was serve Moses. That's all he wanted to do. But the time came. And when God picks a leader, he always picks them from servants. Always does. Always does. So many other cases. Billy Sunday was the great evangelist. Billy Sunday started out as a tent man for the evangelist J. Wilbert Chapman. And he just was his servant. That's all he was. And then the day came when J. Wilbert Chapman went to the pastorate and told Billy Sunday he wanted to take his place. Billy Sunday never intended to. He was a servant first. A lot of folks don't know this, but John R. Rice used to be a song leader. I don't know why I'm saying this, but John R. Rice used to be a song leader. He was an evangelistic song leader for an evangelist, an old country preacher. And the old country preacher one time was preaching a revival, and a real revival broke out. And so Dr. Rice was the singer, and the country preacher wanted to continue the revival. Supposed to end on a Sunday night and begin somewhere else on Monday night. But the revival was going so strongly that the old country preacher said, Dr. Rice said, look, we can't stop this revival. We've got to keep on going. Dr. Rice said, well, we're supposed to start tomorrow night down another place. And the old preacher said to Dr. John R. Rice, the young singer, he said, you go down and get that meeting started. And Dr. Rice said, hold it, I'm not a preacher. He said, well, just tell him you're not and go ahead and preach. And start the meeting. Dr. Rice said, I don't have any sermons. He reached in his Bible and said, here's several of them. Go preach these. And the young singer, who was a servant for the old evangelist, went down and started the revival. And that happened 3 or 4 times. Revival broke out, and the old man said, we can't close here. We've got to keep on going. He said, John, you go on down to the next place and get it started. Dr. Rice, I'm not a preacher. Well, he said, they'll know it. But just tell them anyway. And just go ahead and start preaching. So Dr. G.B. Vick, at one time pastor of the largest Baptist church in the largest church in the world. Dr. Vick started as an assistant, a helper for Dr. J. Frank Norris. And on and on and on it goes. When God chooses a leader, he doesn't choose someone who's looking for leadership. He chooses someone who's looking for servitude and is serving somebody else. And so in verse 2, God said, Moses, my servant, is dead. Now therefore arise, go over this Jordan. By the way, Joshua didn't apply for the job. Go over this Jordan, thou and all this people, unto the land which I do give to them, even to the children of Israel. Every place that the sole of your foot shall tread upon, that have I given unto you, as I said unto Moses. From the wilderness and this Lebanon, even unto the great river, the river Euphrates, all the land of the Hittites, unto the great sea going toward the going down of the sun, shall be your coast. There shall not any man be able to stand before thee all the days of thy life. As I was with Moses, so will I be with thee. Boy, I love that. I will not fail thee nor forsake thee. Be strong and of a good courage. For unto this people shalt thou divide for an inheritance the land which I swear unto their fathers to give them. Now God instructs Joshua, only be thou strong and very courageous, that thou mayest observe to do all the law which Moses, my servant, commanded thee. He said, Joshua, you do what Moses did and do what Moses taught you to do. My servant, turn not from it to the right hand or to the left, that thou mayest prosper, get now, that thou mayest prosper whithersoever thou goest. This book of the law shall not depart out of thy mouth, but thou shalt, and here's the word I want to talk about tonight, meditate therein day and night, that thou mayest observe to do according to all that is written therein. For then shalt thou make thy way prosperous, and then shalt thou have good success. Thou shalt have good success. Now, in order to be prosperous and have success, God said you're going to have to include meditation. Psalm 1, blessed is a man that walketh not in the counsel of the ungodly, nor standeth in the way of sinners, nor sitteth in the seat of the scornful, but his delight is in the law of the Lord, and in his law doth he meditate day and night. Get that word, meditate. It says, he should be like a tree planted by the river of waters that bringeth forth his fruit in his season. His leaf also shall not wither, and whatsoever he doeth shall prosper. Smack dab in the middle of the recipe of prosperity is the art of meditation. We've left long enough meditation to a bunch of Eastern heretics. We don't think about it. This 15 for team, rah rah rah, hail hail the gangs all here kind of Christianity we have. We don't include any time for meditation. I'm going to talk to you tonight about a lady I counseled with a few weeks ago. It's the strangest counseling session you ever heard of in your life. I'm going to tell you about it. It changed her life. And I'm going to tell you what changed her life, and I believe it may help yours some. Father, bless our study tonight to the aid of our people, the strengthening of thy people. Please bless our discussion, our study together. In Jesus' name, amen. Much of my preaching comes from my counseling. I counsel. Listen to me now. Look right this way. Much of my preaching comes from my counseling. That means that if I have a dozen people over a period of a few weeks that have the same problem, I may then realize that there may be an epidemic. It's sort of like a poll. Then I may come and think, well, maybe this thing is spreading throughout the church, and I better preach on some problem that people may have, maybe discouragement. Sometimes people will come. It's summertime, and people get a little bit tired and weary and even depressed. I don't always attack a depression with a sermon on depression, but I may be a little happier sermon. In other words, I try to let my counseling be a Harris poll or a Gallup poll to let me know basically what the needs of the people in the pews are. I counseled with a lady a few months ago and did something I've never done in my life. It worked beautifully, and I want to share it with you tonight. And later she told me it changed her life, and all I'm going to do tonight is just tell you exactly what I told that lady. She was a charming lady. She was well educated. She'd probably been through the fourth grade. She was a delightful person, a good personality. I mean, she's the kind of person that could teach an adult lady Sunday school class without any embarrassment at all. She's the kind that could go knock on a door and witness to somebody without being embarrassed. She's just an outgoing person. Kind of person, if she sat on the airplane or on the bus or train to go somewhere, she'd meet everybody around her. Just an effervescent kind of a person. She was a busy kind of a lady. By the way, I remember this church. I won't tell you her name at all. I won't give you any idea who it is, and no need to ask me. I won't tell you. But she was busy. The kind of lady who would be in the Foster Club, not telling you whether she was or not, but she's that kind of a lady. The kind of a lady who would have been active she's the kind of lady that would be serving in a banquet if the young people had a banquet. Always looking for something that she could participate in. She was the kind of lady that was into many activities, and she was the kind of lady that entertained a lot in her home, had a lot of company, loved to have parties. I don't mean bad parties. Look at me now and listen to me. Get that faraway look out of your eye and listen. I want to help you. She's the kind of lady that entertained a lot in her home. I don't mean just had another couple over, but I mean she loved to have numbers of people. I'm talking about 10, 15, 20 people. And she's the kind that could cook for a lot of people, and she's the kind that didn't matter what her house looked like. I mean, she was a good housekeeper, but if you dirtied it up, it didn't make any difference. She can always clean it up later. And by the way, a very unselfish lady. She served others and did many things for others. I could stand here and list a dozen things right now that she did for somebody else. I wouldn't say she lived for others, but others were a very great part of her life. Now there she sits in my office across the desk from me. She says to me, "Pastor, I cannot stop crying." And she was weeping profusely. Do you weep profusely? She was weeping a lot in my office. I mean, really, she was upset. She said these words. She said, "I feel so disconnected." Now, here's a lady that went soul winning. Here's a lady that was extrovert. Here's a lady that entertained a lot. A lady that you'd say had a lot of friends and was around people an awful lot. And she said, "I feel so disconnected." She said, "I feel lonely, but I'm with people most of the time." Now, that doesn't sound right. That sounds like a contradiction. But that's what she said. "I'm with people most of the time, but I feel lonely." She said, "I try to be a good mother. I try to be a good friend." And she was what I'd call a good mother. And I think a good wife and a good friend. But she said, "I am miserable." Now, up to now, I know what I was going to do, what I was going to say. A lot of times you seek my counsel. I look intelligent, but I'm as confused as you are. And I sat there and, yeah, yes, yes, I've seen this before. And inside I'm saying, "I don't know what I'm going to tell this bird." But anyway, I'm trying to keep you from coming so much. But anyway, she said, "I feel miserable." And she said, "I feel empty inside." She said, "Can anybody help me?" She said, "Can you help me?" And I said, "No, ma'am, I can't." She said, "Can anybody help me? Lisa, would you come up here? I want to use you. I know you real well, and I know you're, in fact, you're a lot like this lady." "Brother Roy, bring a chair and put it right there for Lisa, would you please? And face it toward me, would you? No, not quite that close. That's good. Okay, Lisa. The truth is you're misbehaving, and I'm making you sit up here close to me. Tim, you come and sit over here on this side. No, I don't want you. That's the one she's misbehaving with. But anyway, I'll use you in a minute, Lisa, here. And by the way, this is the kind of personality that the lady had. Boring, dull. But Lisa's always been effervescent. She's always smiling, always smiling. The same type of lady. Now, if you came to me, Lisa, and said, "Preacher, I'm miserable," I'd have a hard time believing it. If you said to me, "I feel empty inside, can you help me?" I said, "No, I can't help you." She said, "Do you know anybody can help me?" And I said, "Yes, I do. I know just the person that can help you." And she said, "Well, I hope they can." And I said, "There's someone I want you to meet." I said, "This person is like you a lot, a charming person, and this person can help you." I asked her to come in my, I went in my waiting room. I'm in the office here, went out in the hallway. She stayed in the office. I went in the waiting room. And I asked her to come in the waiting room. So Lisa, you're the lady, you're there in the waiting room. And I said, "Here is the person I want you to meet." Now I said, "Lisa, meet Lisa." I said, "Ma'am, you don't know yourself. You know everybody in this church. You know your Sunday school class. You know the Foster Club." I said, "I want you to sit." I wouldn't marry her for a second, Tim. She's rebellious is what she is. Look at yourself. I'm sorry. Keep looking at yourself. I said, I can understand why you wouldn't want to. But anyway, But, and I keep looking at Giselle. I said, Lisa, meet Lisa. Now, I said, I want you to sit there for an hour and just... I said, I want you to sit there for an hour. Now, this is a real a replay. This is a rerun of what happened. And it was a serious thing then. It's not to you, but it was. She was crying. And I said, just sit there and meet the person, because that's the person that can help you. I said, I want you to sit there for 1 hour. I went back in my office. And I said, I'm going to be checking on you now. If I check on you and you're not looking at yourself, it's going to be tough. I'm not going to help you if you don't do what I say. But I want you to sit there for an hour. And I want you to get to know yourself. Okay, you don't have to right now. But just stay where you are. I said, now, every day, you don't have to look in the mirror, but I want you to spend an hour with yourself. I said, the truth is, you are afraid to meet yourself. And I'm talking a lot of people like that tonight. You are afraid to meet, listen to me, you are afraid to meet yourself. You don't know yourself. I said, you're afraid. Now, here's why you don't. I said, you're afraid to meet yourself because you might not like yourself. And you don't want to face yourself because you may not like yourself once you meet yourself. I said, the truth is, you will not like everything about yourself once you meet yourself. But some things you will like about yourself. Once you meet yourself, I said to her, once you meet yourself, you will learn to like some things about yourself, and even you will congratulate yourself about some things about you. But I said, likewise, there's some things about yourself you won't like. But I said, those things that you won't like are the things that keep you from wanting to know yourself. I said to her, I said, in this urban society we have, most people don't know themselves. And the average person in this room tonight does not know himself. And I said to her, quit being afraid of yourself. Now, I said this. Now, don't get mad at me, but I said this. I said, Lisa, avoid parties. I would strongly suggest to you that you avoid parties. I would avoid people that have to go to parties. Turn me up just a tad, please. When I ask you, I can't see you. Wave your hand if you do. Okay. Use the green light if you want to. But I said, avoid people. Now, I'm not saying parties are wrong, but you avoid the partier. You be with people that like to be with just a person. And I said, Lisa, it was not Lisa, but I said, Lisa, I want you to learn to be with Lisa. Then I want you to go home, and I want you to learn to be with your husband. Every time you and your husband go somewhere, you don't have to take another couple with you. Get to know him, and then get to know each child individually. I believe in the family circle, but I do not believe the family circle is as important as each member of the family knowing each other member of the family. And I said, Lisa, your main activity should be with yourself, and your second main activity should be with your husband, and your third main activity should be with the children. One-on-one. Now, spend some time as a family, but get to know each other individually. And by all means, get to know yourself. Then I showed Lisa some scriptures. I showed her Isaiah 57 and verse 8. I said, it says, discover thyself. Now, the truth is, I said, Lisa, you have not yet discovered yourself. You don't know how to pull yourself out. You don't know yourself well enough to know how to pull yourself out of depression. But you need to discover yourself and find out some things about you. You need to know right now you're depressed. You're sitting there crying right now. Now you need to... you're sitting there laughing right now. But you're depressed. You're unhappy. You're miserable. But you don't even know how to pull yourself out of it. You ought to know what pulled yourself out of it. I showed her that scripture, Isaiah 57, 8, discover thyself. Then I showed her Psalm that said, know thyself. Once you discover yourself, study thyself. The Apostle Paul said to Timothy, young Timothy. And all this, I'm talking to her. She's sitting there in the waiting room, and I'm talking to her. And I said, the Apostle Paul said to Timothy, take heed to thyself. What he said was, Timothy, you become what you ought to become, and then you take heed. The word heed, take heed, means to study yourself and copy yourself. So I said, Lisa, discover yourself. The average person here does not know how to come out of the doldrums when you get in the doldrums. And you ought to know yourself well enough. What makes you happy? What brings you out of it? I know what brings me out. Now, Mrs. Hiles knows what. When she gets depressed, she knows herself exactly what to do. She goes to the mall. That always pulls her out of it. And how many of you ladies have discovered yourself like that too? Wonderful. I said, now, Lisa, I want you 1 hour a day to sit there and with yourself. And I want you to discover yourself, and I want you to know yourself. Then I said, Lisa, I will give you another scripture. 2 Samuel 5:24 says, stir thyself. And then Psalm 64:5 says, encourage thyself. And then Psalm 37:4 says, delight thyself. And 1 Chronicles 21:2 says, advise thyself. And 1 Kings 13:7 says, refresh thyself. And 1 Kings 20:22 says, strengthen thyself. Now, you need to learn to know yourself. You shouldn't have to go spend $1,000 some psychiatrist to get you out of this depression. You ought to know what gets you out of depression. The mall. Say that. Did you hear that, Tim? The mall. And but I mean, you ought to know yourself. The average person in this room, you study, you know recipes about how to make, you ladies do, recipes about how to make certain sweets, certain cakes, certain pies, certain dishes. You know how to make them. You know all kinds of recipes. And the honest truth is, every single person ought to know himself. Know how to refresh thyself. Learn what refreshes you. Learn what encourages you. Learn what delights you. Learn what strengthens you. Learn yourself. There she sits, holding the mirror in the waiting room, and I give her all of these verses. Now, this leads me, Lisa, to one of the most important words in all of the Bible, I told her, and that word is the word meditate. Meditate. The word meditate means commune with yourself. That's what it means. It means carry on a conversation with yourself. I talk to myself a lot. Now, there are three reasons why I talk to myself. Number one, I love to hear an intelligent man talk. Number two, I love to talk to an intelligent man. Number three, I love to see two intelligent people talk to each other. And so I talk to myself. And but that's what it means. The word meditate means commune with yourself. When the Bible commands us to meditate, God is saying, commune with yourself about the Word of God. Commune with yourself about what God has said. Commune with yourself about what God has done. And commune with yourself about what God is. Those are the three things you're supposed to meditate about in the Bible concerning God. What He said, again and again, it says, meditate in the law of the Lord. Meditate in thy statutes. Meditate in thy precepts. Meditate in thy word. And then it said, meditate about the Lord. And then it says, meditate about His wondrous works. You meditate about what He is. You meditate about what He said. You meditate about what He's done. Now, Lisa, the next thing is this. Meditate means commune with yourself. Now, let me illustrate what I'm talking about, Lisa. Because the cloud had to give rain to the earth in order for there to be that newspaper. But that isn't all. I see sunshine. There is rain in that newspaper, and there is sunshine in that newspaper, because nothing can grow without sunshine. If there's no sunshine, there's no tree. If there's no tree, there's no paper. And so I see paper, but I see a cloud, and I see rain, and I see sunshine. But that isn't all, Lisa. I see a logger who cut the tree. I see a man who worked hard to cut the tree. I see a man who was taught to work hard. I see a father and mother that taught him to work hard. I see a father that said to that logger, you make your own way.
See, you saw the newspaper, Lisa. I saw the sunshine. I saw the cloud. I saw the rain. I saw the logger. I saw the parents that trained that logger when I see that newspaper. Lisa, that isn't all. I saw the wheat. I see wheat in that newspaper. I see the wheat that made the bread that gave strength to that logger. And I see the farmer that raised the wheat. And I see the minerals in the land from which came the wheat. But that isn't all, Lisa. I see the baker who baked the bread that the farmer ate so he could have strength enough, so he could raise the wheat, so he could give the wheat to the logger. So the logger, it's getting complicated, isn't it? So now I'm talking about, this is the way I think. I think this way. This is what you call meditation. Now I'll get down after a while and make it more practical. But so I see wheat. I see a farmer who raised the wheat. I see the wheat that the logger ate to give him strength. I see the logger. I see the mother and father of the logger who taught him character enough to work hard. I see sunshine. I see a cloud. I see rain. What am I doing? I'm communing with myself. I am meditating. And by the way, until you learn to meditate, you're never going to amount to much at all. You're not going to have real love. Real love is the result of meditation. Real loyalty is result of meditation. Real faithfulness is result of meditation. And so I meditate. But that isn't all, Lisa. I see the men who made the saw that the logger used to cut down the tree. And I see the wheat that it took to give those men who made the saw to the logger. That isn't all. Lisa, I see the logger's parents. That isn't all. I see those who made the paper. But that isn't all. I see the reporter who gathered the news. But that isn't all. I see the printing. I see the printing presses. And I see the printer who printed it. But that isn't all. I see the photographers. I see the typist. But that isn't all. I see the delivery boy who delivered it. And I see the mom and dad who didn't spoil the kid rotten and made him go out and work a little bit to make a little money. I see them when I see this. I see time. I see space. I see earth. I see rain. I see sunshine. I see cloud. I see minerals. I see heat and all these other things. Now, aren't you ashamed of yourself? But see, that's what you call meditation. Now, I said, Lisa, if you take some time every day to take some kind of an object and you look at that object and see all that went into making that object. For example, you go out and plop yourself at Howells Anderson College, sit out there in the classroom. Somebody put that classroom there. Somebody paid for that classroom. Somebody started that college. You see a teacher standing up teaching you. Somebody had to train that teacher. Some mother or father had to give character to the teacher who's teaching you. Somebody had to put the electricity in. Somebody had to put the heating unit in. I'm saying we just live. We don't learn to be grateful. We don't learn to love. And the reason we don't is because we do not commune with ourselves. Thank God tonight I love to be with myself. I am wonderful. But by the way, I enjoy being with people, but I also can be with myself. When the fellows, the service is over around the country for these many, many long years, the preachers go out to McDonald's to get a bite to eat. I go back to my room. You know why I go back to my room? Because I want to meditate. I want to stop and realize what happened tonight. I do it often. Let me illustrate again. I took something else. I said, Lisa, and it wasn't Lisa, of course. I said, Lisa, I'll be back in a few minutes. I went to my office. I had some canned goods in my office. I was going to take to the Philippine Islands. And I did take them, but didn't eat them over there. And I brought this very can of potatoes. White, or whole white potatoes. I brought these potatoes. And I said to this lady, I said, Lisa, what do you see here? And the lady was not as smart as Lisa. She said, I see a can of whole white potatoes. I said, I'll tell you what I see. I see rain. I see sunshine. I see a farmer. I see minerals. I see a plow. I see the company that made the plow. I see the man who plowed and planted and harvested. I see ground. I see a truck. I see a trucker. I see a store. I see a stock boy. I see lights. I see electricity in the store. I see heat in the store. I see a furnace in the store. I see a checker in the store. I see a bowl where the potatoes are going to be. I see a plate. I see a fork. I see a knife. And on and on and on. And all you saw was a can of potatoes. Now, that's all you see. You're going through life just seeing what is visible. But you're not seeing what really makes life rich. I said the other day, I said, you drive down the street. You see some pretty flowers, but you don't meditate on those flowers. You don't think about those flowers. That lady, one of the most attractive, I don't mean physically beautiful, though she's a very attractive lady physically, but I mean one of the most attractive personalities in our church, was sitting in there absolutely beside herself in tears, totally depressed and sad and brokenhearted, and she said, Pastor, I don't know what to do with myself. And I'll quote her again. She said, I can't stop crying, and I feel so disconnected, and I'm with people most of the time, and I don't understand it. Now look at the mirror again, Lisa. What do you see? Let me give you a hint. I see a very handsome man. What do you see? A very beautiful woman? Look at it again, Lisa. May I tell you, Lisa, what you ought to see as you look at that mirror? You ought to see a mother who labored for you, who carried you, fed you, and loved you. You ought to see a mother who cooked your meals and cleaned your house. All you see is that you need a little powder on your nose, desperately. But the nose, anyway, I see what you ought to see is a mother who sacrificed for you. What you ought to see, Lisa, is a father who's worked hard. A father who paid your tuition in school. A father who worked so you could go to school. A father who bought you clothes. And a father who provided a house and provided you food and loved you and cared for you. Lisa, what you ought to see, I told the lady, you ought to see a teacher. Yea, a lot of teachers who taught you in school and contributed to what you see when you look in that mirror. And Lisa, what you ought to see is a pastor who loves you and has tried to help you through the years. And what you ought to see, Lisa, are friends who stood beside you and stood with you through the years. And what you ought to see, Lisa, is I said this lady was married. I said you ought to see a husband. A husband that works hard to see that you're provided for. Lisa, I said this lady, you don't work outside the home. Your husband provides all you need him to provide for. And I happen to know that you're going to get married one of these days. And I happen to know that your fiancé, are you fiancéed yet? Anyway, I happen to know that he has vowed that he's going to do all he can to keep you from having to work outside the home. But you have a husband who works so provide for you. And you have this lovely house. And you know what kind of house you have. And you know what kind of furniture you have. And you have a good wardrobe. And when you see, look at that mirror, you ought to see your husband. You ought to see your mother-in-law. Let's don't take this thing too far. And by the way, some of you stinking idiots, young men, you wouldn't have had that girl if it hadn't been for the woman that reared her. There's nothing in the world to me any worse than some punko that'll take somebody's daughter and not appreciate her parents. Well, you say they haven't been good to me. Well, they reared her, and you think she's worth marrying, and you ought to be good to them and love them and thank God for them and meditate on the fact how many times that woman has cooked a meal for the woman girl you love, and how many times that man has sweat to make a living for the woman you love, and how together they reared the woman you love. And I said, Lisa, you ought to see a mother-in-law and a father-in-law. And Lisa, you ought to see a school. Now, the truth is, Lisa, you don't know yourself. You have not communed with yourself. Now, let me just, I'll ask you to go ahead and stay here because I enjoy having you up here, Lisa. And if you had to look at Roy Moffat as much as I do, anything you'd like to see. You don't know this, but every day of my life, I pray through this auditorium. I do not know, I don't remember all of you, but I know where most of you sit. And I pray through this auditorium, and I pray for as many of you as come to my mind. Now, sometimes, for example, I know where different people sit. I know that Brother Forrest sits back there. I know that Brother Sally sit back there. And I know basically where a lot of you sit. I know the Crutches sit over here and on and on. But I do this. I stop every day and pick out somebody from this half of the auditorium and somebody from this half of the auditorium and somebody from this half of the balcony and this half of the balcony and somebody from the choir. And I'll take at least 5 minutes about that person and think about that person. I'll think what they've meant to me. Now, let me just pick somebody out. I'll take old Price down, and he's at the front. And if I think about Brother Price, I'll say to myself, that man walks down the alley with me, and we always have a lot of fun, and we always enjoy each other. That man works at Howells Anderson College, and he does maintenance work at Howells Anderson College. I'm talking about he works with his hands. He's not one of these lazy teachers. I'm sorry. He works with his hands at Howells Anderson College. And the guy's tired. And he's a good man. And I'll think about him. And I'll think about his family. And I'll commune with myself. So when I see him on Sunday, I just don't see Gerald Price. I see a faithful wife. I see a dear family. I see loyal people. I think about the work. When I think about, sometimes I'll come, when I get this section over here, I'll come to Mrs. Evans. And I'll think about what she's been through. I'll think about the cancer. I'll think about the surgeries. I'll think about the chemotherapies. I'm communing with myself. Now, the people say, Brother Howells is a loving person. That's the silliest thing you ever heard in your life. No, Brother Howells is a thinking person. Your problem is not you don't love. Your problem is you don't think. You can think yourself to love if you'll commune with yourself. But you're too busy. Hail, hail, the gang's all here. 15 for team. Rah, rah, rah. Play here tomorrow. Play here tomorrow. Party here tomorrow. Party here the next day. You got to get with somebody. Don't want to be by yourself. And I said, now, Lisa, if you want to lick this depression, you are going to have to get acquainted with Lisa. And I said, I want you to promise me that every day of your life, you'll take at least 1 hour. And I don't care who you are. You ought to do the same thing. At least 1 hour of your life every day. And you spend it with yourself. Now, I'm not talking about watching the dirty box. I'm not talking about listening to somebody's some music. I'm not talking about reading the newspaper. I'm talking about you sit down every day. You say, why don't you preach the Bible? There's more about meditation in the Bible than there is about not smoking cigarettes. I'm not talking about being by yourself and watching Donahue. I'm not talking about being by yourself and watching the television set. I'm not talking about being by yourself and reading the newspaper. I'm talking about being by yourself and commune with yourself and look at something and see what is there and see what's behind it and learn to appreciate somebody.
You sit in the classroom at Hammond Baptist School. Let me tell you what you ought to see. Listen to me carefully. You sit in the classroom at Hammond Baptist High School or grade school, junior high school, gripe, complain, break the rules. What you ought to see is a vacant place out there, a wilderness without a street, without a sidewalk, without a building. And what you ought to see is a group of deacons going out there one night and saying, we're going to purchase this and make this into a school for our young people. And what you ought to see is, listen to me, what you ought to see is the sacrifice. And by the way, just because I'm involved, it doesn't matter, but I am involved. And by, something else too.
If you'll think about that a little while, you teenagers, think about that a little while, what Brother Howells has done to put that school out there, you'll have enough love for me to listen to you while I preach instead of misbehaving church. There are no bad people, they're just thoughtless people. And thoughtless people are people who disobey the command of God to meditate. Commune with thyself. Want to be successful, Joshua? You're a general. It's going to take more than just training your soldiers. It's going to take more, Joshua, than just being with the guys and knowing how to hurl the spear. It's going to take more than just knowing how to command an army. Joshua, you're going to have to meditate. Commune with yourself. Do you know why you never express your love? Of love should be an overflow of thought. When your thought life overflows, you'll say, I love you. But you don't think how hard that wife works while you're gone. You don't think what it's like to take care of three or four little kids and diapers while you're out working. You don't think about that. If you'd think about it, you'd go home and love your wife. And you women don't think what your husband's done to see to it that you're cared for and provided for and clothed and fed. And housed. And you don't think all the meals he's purchased for you, and you men don't think all the meals your wife has cooked for you. I'm trying to tell you tonight, this country, the reason this country is cold and dead and unaffectionate is we don't think. We don't commune with ourselves. And I said, Lisa, every day, I want you to tell me right now what time every day you're going to spend. You don't have to. I said, think about it for a minute. What time can you take for 1 hour every day to sit down and take an object or take a person and think back through that object or that person? Do you know that oftentimes I'll pray for somebody who plowed the field, raised those potatoes? I'll say, dear Lord, I don't know who the guy is, but I pray you'd bless him today. Because I am meditating. I am seeing things because my mind is seeing and not just my eyes are seeing. It's an interesting thing to me that we're so all fired interested that nobody watches Love Boat. But I want to tell you something. If we had learned to meditate, we wouldn't need to watch Love Boat. We would learn to love people, appreciate people. If you knew the burden they carry, every once in a while, somebody ought to stop. Think about Bob Hooker with six girls. Somebody ought to think about Roy Moffitt with JoJo. I mean, look, oftentimes I think about this man. I'll sit in my office or I'll sit in a motel room. And I'll think about what that man's done to stand beside me all these years and what he's given up to stand beside me all these years. I think about those early days when I first came here. I think about Mabel. I think about her parents back there. I am not going to go through life as pastor of this church and not appreciate the people sitting in those pews. I'm not going to do it. I'm not going to go through life and eat an egg and not thank God for the hen. Neat bacon, I'm going to thank God for the pig. The sad, tragic truth is, I'm putting my finger tonight on your pocket. Now, I'll tell you something else, too. I'll close with this. I got 3 minutes. A couple came to my office having marital problems. 90% of all the marital problems in this church could be solved if you'd think about what the other person goes through and does and is done for you. And the man said, my wife's not affectionate. She's cold. No such thing as an unaffectionate wife. No such thing as a cold wife. Just a wife that doesn't meditate. I said to her, you take 30 minutes a day and think about that man. You think about that man. And you think how hard he works and you think what he's meant to you. And you think how he fights the traffic going to work and fights the traffic on the expressways. And you think about the sweat and toil and labor. It so happened this guy was a mechanic. I said, you think about those greasy cars and those greasy fingernails And the fact he gets out there and sweats blood and tears for you, supports you.
If you will think about that 30 minutes a day, you will have your arms out and your lips puckered when he gets home. There are no unaffectionate women, only women that don't meditate and commune with themselves about their guys. There are no people in the world who whom it's hard to say, I love you. Only people that never stop and think about the object enough. 1 minute. I love you. I tell you I love you. Do you know why I love you? Because I think almost every day of my life what you've done for me and the way you stuck your neck out for me and you stood beside me. In case you're here and you want to love me, you take a few minutes every day and think what Brother Hiles goes through and what he's been through, and you will love me. It'll stop every church split in America. It'll stop every in-law problem in America. It'll stop every marital problem in America. It'll stop 95% of the parent and children's problem in America. It'll stop the delinquent problem in the schools and the discipline problem in the schools if God's people would just stop and think about each other and commune with themselves. Get to know yourself. She gave me back my mirror. She went back to her seat. She came back to see me about 3 months later. And she said, my life has been transformed. She said, I am living the richest life of anybody in the whole world. She said, thank me for introducing me to the one person that could solve my problem. I have met myself. Shall we stand?